Welcome, everyone, to the Immigrant's Journey podcast. I am your host, Carmenetta, and today I am delighted to have with us Dr. Stella Vlahou, researcher, professor, and international convener for the DCU School of Psychology. Stella, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Carmen, for inviting me to participate. I really appreciate that. It's something different from what we would typically do on a daily basis.
My absolute pleasure. I always like to get a little bit of background on my guests. So tell us, where were you born and what was it like growing up back home?
I was born in Athens, the capital of Greece. And actually saying Athens, I say Athens because it's Athens overall as an area, but I actually don't come from Athens itself. I was born in Athens, but I lived most of my childhood and adolescent life in the north suburbs of Athens. So we live in one of the north suburbs of Athens. It's called New Erythrea, Nea Erythrea in Greek, New Erythrea, and it still is, but it was a beautiful area. Exactly, I point that out because because I wasn't born in the center of Athens, in apartment buildings and big buildings and noisy streets, and so. I grew up in an area where, at least at that time, it was full of fields around a beautiful neighborhood, kind of what we would consider now countryside neighborhood, us playing out in the neighborhood all the time, our parents begging us to go back into the house to have our lunch or dinner. It was a beautiful time, lots of contact with, nature altogether, with animals, with nature. We would barely ever be in the house, especially summertime. So I think I was lucky in that regard because I grew up in our own house in this neighborhood, not a big apartment building with no balcony, no view or anything like that. Actually, our house has a gorgeous view to mountains surrounding Athens. So, I always grew up with this feeling of independence, freedom, cleaner air, and very sociable components of my childhood and adolescence as well, really interacting with neighbors, friends, schools being very close, walking distance and quiet neighborhoods around. So yeah, I always treasure my childhood and adolescent years at home. And I find that, again, I feel that I was very lucky
It sounds really idyllic and beautiful. Tell me, what's something about your culture that you love?
There are lots of things that I like and lots of things that I don't like. things that I love. I know it will sound very, it will sound very commonly said because many Greeks would say that. But there is a word that there is no translation about this in English. It's called philotimo. It's the kind of the internal need to satisfy other people's needs and treat them well and help them and support them, that is really an internal urge, a kind of a moral internal urge that is not based on, on profit, is not based financial or other benefits.
Would the English word altruism be close to it?
Not really. I know what you mean because, again, it's a word that we have in Greek as well, altruismos. It's not the same. No, it's not exactly the same. It's something more internal. And I think this is one thing that I'm proud of in general, or the Greeks. And one other thing that I'm proud of is, as we always tend to say, we have a lot of sun. And in that regard, for the most part, at least until before the crisis hit, we want to believe that we are positive, happy in general, and smiley individuals in general. Then, we were very lucky to have been born in this specific geographical location, which offers a combination of some beautiful locations, beautiful geographical, you know, locations, and the sea. Yeah, I love the sea. So we are surrounded by sea everywhere. So yeah, I think these are aspects that I absolutely love about my country. And when I relate to the culture in particular, as you asked me, it's not only this aspect about morality and offering to others, it's also aspects that relate to traditional components that entail from, you know, diet-related aspects, Mediterranean diet, to embedding tradition with sometimes even religion, but I wouldn't count that on religion, and trying to keep those traditions as strong as we can. It's probably not as strongly reflected over the last few years or decades even, but I grew up with those traditions that some of them originated probably from religion, but actually have been embedded really in the culture, and they are beautiful and they are unique, and the sense of family and friendship and close bonds in that is really, really strong. This is something that I have also seen in Ireland. In Ireland, again, families are very strongly bonded. It's very nice to see. And yeah, this is something that I found actually in common here in Ireland, and I loved since the very beginning, since I moved here.
And when did you move to Ireland?
In less than a month, it will be 9 years now.
Wow.
I moved to Ireland 1st of September 2011.
What attracted you to Ireland?
I wouldn't know too much before I moved here, other than friends, Irish friends that I would have met in the past, either while I was in Greece, but even more while I was living in San Diego, from which I moved here directly. I cannot say too much because I would sound very naive. It is a naive thought at that time. I felt I was naive because I really didn't know too much about Ireland other than all the kind people, nice and kind and funny people that I would have met as friends in my years abroad, and aspects that related to the music and historical cultural components. I'm always interested in history. I was reading a lot about historical and cultural components of the Irish. These are the things that attracted me the most. Then, of course, you know, I would have seen pictures. I would have visited Ireland very briefly once, actually, for a conference 2-3 years before I moved here. I loved the scenery, you know, and that's fine and that's nice. But it's not that I moved here for the scenery, as I've heard other people say. I moved here without knowing too much. And as I say now, really, in so many ways, I felt I was quite naive. In any bad manner. It's just that it's not that I knew a lot and I knew people here and I had relatives here or something like that, you know, that would lead me to come to Ireland. I was applying for jobs back in Europe. One of these was at DCU. I said, you know, since I'm applying to the UK, why not apply to this particular post in Ireland? And I ultimately, you know, got this. So ultimately, it was a matter of luck, really, that I ended up here.
It worked out anyway, because you've been DCU for a long time.
It did. And, you know, we all go through phases, of course, with our work at points, ups and downs. And I would have been through those very intense phases where I was thinking I should leave, but I haven't. I'm still here.
What was the most difficult part for integrating into Irish culture for you?
It is the fact that I mean, what I always say is that Irish people are so incredibly friendly, so incredibly helpful and supportive, to the extent that I found some of them being probably way more supportive than some of the Greeks would have been if I had returned back home, honestly. So I praise them for this. I find that this is incredibly, you know, this reflects a beautiful culture overall. So this is a good part of it. What I struggled with, and I think I still struggle with, is that family and older friendship bonds are really, really strong. But at the same time, I also find that compared to my culture, again, I find people being very reserved. So people won't open up as easily as we do at home, where we probably open up too much. It's more difficult to create strong bonds. But I don't know if that only has to do with the Irish culture and the difficulty that I found in them, or as I more accurately believe, it has to do with that together with my age when I moved to Ireland. I believe if I had moved here when I was in my early 20s, I probably wouldn't have experienced that as much. But because I moved here at an older age, I guess it is an age where people are already formulating families. They are having children. They have more established jobs. So, you know, the priority, of course, in this case is the family, the children, you know, my job, the older relationships. All of these come first. So in that regard, I find that people don't open up to more connections. I mean, strong, you know, really in-depth connections at this point. That's what I found a bit more difficult. Honestly, the fact that I find people are more reserved in general, but also because of our age at this point, that you don't really build strong bonds like the ones I would have had since my childhood, adolescent, even university years.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. Your age really makes a difference in how you interact with people and those around you. What is something about your culture that's interesting that most people don't know about?
I think I referred to it a bit earlier.
Yes.
That relates to, you know, helping others.
Tell me the word again.
Philotimo.
Philotimo.
I would spell it with an philotimo or a phi, like, you know, philosophy. Yeah. philotimo. I don't think there is too much that people don't know about the Greeks other than as it happens with every other country and every other culture. You can find the very good Greeks and the very bad Greeks. Excuse me. Happily, the majority of them are the very good Greeks, the ones who will help people, who would be very, very kind. But you can also come across those very, hopefully very rare individuals who could be, not very kind, not very friendly, not very welcoming. Again, as it happens with every other culture and country in the world, it's not that the Greeks have the sun and they are always the happiest people ever. There is a combination of every different behavior and personality you will find everywhere else in the globe.
Of course, people are people.
Yeah, exactly. The one thing that people don't know, but it doesn't have to do with the Greek culture, it has to do with Greek weather, mainly, if it's any relevant, is that everybody always, especially in Ireland, I found that people always think of Greece as the sunny place where the temperature is always, you know, over 20, 25 degrees, and you can go there throughout the year and enjoy this very high heat. This is not the case. Greece, happy, has all four seasons, as I say lots of times to all people who ask me about it. We have way colder weather and heavier cold weather than Ireland winter time, especially up on the mountains or in the north sides, in the north counties of Greece. So it is something that people don't know about the country, you know, and the weather of the country overall. They always think of Greece as the sunny islands in the summer.
Yes.
And definitely that's the case in the summer, but the winter time, we also have lots of snow, lots of rain in different areas. And, you know, it depends also where you come from in Greece, but it is a very nice combination of different weathers.
Yeah, it certainly is. It's the same with Brazil. Whenever I say to people that I'm from Brazil, it's like, oh, you must be so used to the heat. But it's like, no, I come from the south of Brazil. The south of Brazil, you have all four seasons. Winter's pretty bad. Sometimes we even get snow. But nobody thinks of that when they think of Brazil. They don't think of...
Yeah, they think of a very tropical place. Exactly, yeah. That's the impression that I get even when you hear, you know, Irish people in particular here or other foreigners really talk about Greece.
Yeah, definitely. Something that I like to ask my guests as well is, what has been your dating experience abroad compared to back home? How different are Irish guys than Greek guys, for example?
My husband is Italian, by the way.
Oh!
I don't know if that says something about who I ended up with choosing, you know, at the end of this, as you asked me about dating in this process. So probably this says something. I have to say, again, I don't want to personalize it and isolate it from what I mentioned earlier in regards to the Irish culture overall. I guess, again, you know, we always say that as women, we are more open, we are more expressive, and guys would typically be more reserved.
Yeah,
that's of course the same, I guess, again, in different cultures. In that regard, I can only just see that even with friends that I have, not from a dating scene, but friends, male Irish friends, who again would not be very easy to open up to discussions and to, you know, conversations, or definitely not to personal matters as much. I haven't come across this much here in Ireland. But again, Carmen, I apologize for saying that, but it's it could be unfair, as I said earlier, because it might also have to do with age. It might have with people having established their families and having, you know, their issues and their... And most importantly, having their own family and their own long-lasting friends to talk to if they experience some difficulty. Why would they come and talk to me, for example, when they would have only known me for a few years, when they could express something, a difficulty, a problem to a friend that they would have had for life.
Yeah.
So, again, I just find the difference or the difficulty, if you want, probably reflecting to anyone wanting to date somebody, again, for us women trying to, if it's Irish men, for example, I guess it might have to do with people being more reserved again. But I would also say, once again, it might have to do with age as well. I have discussed that with Irish friends at points, and they do agree with this. So I might be a bit more sensitive to it, but I have also got some kind of a confirmation in regards to this, comparing, because they know me well enough, and they compare my behavior to their own. And I would have got this confirmation that, yes, you are right. Definitely, we are more reserved. We're not as open. We're not as expressive in that regard. I'm not saying that because it's a bad thing. I actually find myself and the other Greeks, for example, lots of times opening up too much. You don't need to share everything. really, honestly, the fact that people are more reserved is not a I don't see it as a negative. It's just a difference, as you asked me. It's a different approach, or it's a different type of behavior. I don't necessarily think it's bad.
Yeah, definitely. So when you came to Ireland, did you have in your mind a clear pathway for your career? Did you say, oh, I'm going to be a university professor? Did you ever want to be a clinician? How did that all come about?
That's interesting. And every time I'm asked about this question, in similar manners to this, especially when you're doing your third year essays about talking to, an academic and getting an interview from them in your working psychology module, I spend hours responding to this, I guess. I can keep it brief. When I was moving to Ireland, when I made the decision from San Diego as a postdoctoral researcher to move back to Europe with an independent academic position, at that point, it was already clear to me that I wanted to follow an independent academic career. But if I was thinking of your question from some time before that, I would have always had a very strong interest in either becoming an independent academic researcher or professor at a university or practicing at the clinical level, because I was always very, very strongly interested in both neuroscience and clinical psychology. Both were really, really close to my heart. I chose to follow the neuroscience path. And in that regard, the way I was thinking of my future, it would have always been through academia. So as you asked me, at the time when I was moving and I had just moved to Ireland, it was a very clear, very in-depth, very much in-depth thought and plan ahead for my career.
And how do you go about achieving your goals? What's the process that you use?
I'd say it's quite standard to how anyone in this area would try to go ahead. You have a position and you get a contract, and you, through that contract, you're either, it depends on your terms, of course, always, but for the majority of us, especially the in an Irish educational environment, the majority of us would be required to be teaching, doing research, and doing administrative work. And as you try to progress in your career, what I typically have seen now, and it's been 9 years, unbelievably, you go ahead with what is agreed on a yearly basis in regards to your main roles, such as being a module coordinator for some modules, but also you're trying to be productive with your own research as well. And if you really want to be promoted at some stage, if you really want to become more and more successful, more and more experienced, then you need to be involved in other components of what we call academic life, an academic professional life. So it's not just teaching a module and, having a postgraduate student and doing some research work. You will need to be more involved even in committees, for example, at university level, assuming new roles and more advanced roles as you progress. In the past few years, it is very strongly suggested that we engage with community-related or public, the public in general. So we try to do the best we can for our research to reflect value, ultimate value, more direct value to the community or to people's health, in my case, with my area. So it seems like, it seems as if it's a path that goes ahead and you go along with it, if you see it this way. But at the same time, you cannot just follow a path and go along with it. You need to do things for the path to go along the way you have dreamt of and the way you think would be successful for you. So I always try to do things that would either help me learn more or would help me advance my career, or both. Gaining more experience. So I, except for my teaching, my own research, and setting up my lab always, you know, I offered to be the chairperson for our program for 2-3 years, for three years at least now, as things currently stand. I definitely have another year ahead. But also, you know, I agreed happily. I offered to be the international convener for the school, the new School of Psychology, since last September. And all of these are kind of internal roles, but at the same time, externally to DCU, again, for the aspects of my career progression, I would have been involved in numerous other tasks, from editorial roles to external examiner roles to external evaluators of grants roles, to, again, participating in committees in a voluntary manner, in committees from different formal official societies that would have to do with public awareness and all of that. It really is a combination of things, especially if you do not dream of your career as just a stable, boring, as I always say, kind of thing of, you know, I have a position at the university, let's say in some cases, you know, not in mine, but, you know, maybe some cases, you know, people would have a permanent contract, they have secured their job, that's it, that's fine. I'm just teaching, doing some basic research, and that's it. I'm getting my salary, and I'm just waiting for my retirement. I don't see, and I guess the majority of us, if not all, don't really see our careers in academia this way. We are, in general, I think, people who are strongly motivated, who want to progress, who love knowledge, who love progress and advancement in our respective areas. And most of us will do the best we can to follow that path, however that path is pictured, you know, is dreamt of. So it's a lot that is involved in this pathway.
What is your favorite part of your role?
The interaction with the students, my direct interaction with the students. I know I mentioned it before our recording started today, that this is the one thing that I've missed a lot during the COVID-19 restrictions now. Really, my direct interaction with my students would have been something that I would have valued. And I have to say, more and more, lots of times, you know, as I progress in this independent academic career, more and more, it's beautiful. Sometimes it can be very difficult, but it's so rewarding as well. Honestly, it is so rewarding. I think seeing your students progressing, succeeding, ultimately with whatever they do before your graduation, but even after your graduation, keeping in touch with some of these students that would have graduated years ago and seeing how they progress in what they wanted to do. It's so nice to see. And I always feel proud that I could have potentially played a tiny bit, like I have put a little stone, or I have put I have played a minor, even a minor role into this career of those ex-students, current alumni. It's very nice to see. It's really, really nice to see. And I have mentioned it before. I don't have my own children yet, but in so many ways, I feel I have over 100 kids every year, or adolescents, you know, or adult kids to take care of and to embrace in my own way. And as I say, you know, kind of nurture in my own way as well, not only from the knowledge coming from my modules, but most importantly, with any advice I could give them or any help I could offer them if they experience any difficulties.
Yeah. Speaking of advice, what's the best career advice you've ever gotten?
On the day I was defending my PhD thesis, after I finished the seven committee in Greece, the PhD Vivas take place with seven committee members, three internal and four external. So as soon as my Viva finished, at the point when the result was announced to me, I got back into that kind of examination room, and I was given the result that it was a successful PhD. You know, I got it. I'm a doctor now. And one of my internal committee members and kind of a secondary supervisor to my work, who would have always been one of my most favorite and most loving professors during my undergraduate years, he shook my hand to congratulate me. And at that point, as we are very expressive in the Greeks as well, he pointed out to his stomach, touching it with his hand and saying, "Now you need to build a very strong stomach." And I know it probably doesn't make sense for many people the way I say it.
But it translates fine. You get it.
You're going to experience a lot of things. Get ready, get prepared, because he knows that I was a bit too sensitive, you know, very vulnerable, especially at that time. And he wanted to ensure that I would struggle in my career ahead. This is, I think, the strongest memory I have from all the advice I would have got. And I have to say, this is just one example. I would have got lots of other very good advice from direct supervisors or not over years and years. And I do keep it strongly in my heart. But this is one that has stayed with me, possibly because it was a very special day anyway, so it's very strong in my memory. But it also, at points over the last many, many years since my PhD defense, it comes back very often.
I like that.
From very stressful times preparing a grant to probably, you know, some difficulties, some disappointments, it always comes to mind. Stella, you need to remember what Professor Castellakis had told you at that time. You have to build a strong stomach, have you?
One final question. What do you know now that you wish you knew when you first moved to Ireland?
I don't think I would have needed to know something more. And I say that because my alternative answer to this would be how long I would stay in Ireland for. But I would already spoil it for myself, because I always liked more difficult, more challenging and more unexpected tasks. I like my life to be quite organized, but at the same time, I always like surprises.
Yes.
And always like challenges. So I contradict myself. If I told you, I would love to have known how long I would stay here for. But then if I knew, it would really automatically all become so boring. You know, you have a deadline in a way. There's no deadline to our work, especially if we like what we are doing. I honestly cannot think of something specific at the moment, other than what I just am telling you in between a joke and a serious.
No, but it makes sense, the desire to want to be surprised. Like, if I were to think back when I first moved to Ireland, I wouldn't want to know anything. I wouldn't advise myself anything. It's just like, just go through it. Because yes, there have been so many ups and downs and unknowns and moments of severe anxiety. But it's like, it's turning out well. So I'm enjoying the adventure as it goes.
That's exactly it. You don't want to spoil it in this way. If I had moved to Ireland with a definite deadline of, you know, whatever, 2-3 years, and then you have to go, let's say, you know, you have to go. I don't know, maybe I would have done some things more or faster in an effort to gain more experience at a short period of time. That could be one benefit to it. But I honestly wouldn't have wished to know anything more than what I knew when I moved here. Even in regards to, as I was telling you earlier, relevant to your previous questions about, you know, friendships, and I knew nobody when I moved here. Nobody at all, definitely not in Dublin. I knew a couple of very good friends, and one of them a colleague as well, at Cork. Nobody else. So, and it was difficult in the beginning, but I don't regret it either. I think it would have been way easier and you know, way more settled in so many ways if I had come here, because I had people to count on And that's the same approach I had taken when I moved to San Diego. Again, I didn't know anyone at all other than the professor who invited me to work in their lab. So, you know, it's always a challenge, and I always like challenges. And I like to keep an open mind as well. I like the fact that I got to know the Irish culture as much as I know it. I don't know it fully, but as much as I know in the last 9 years, it has always been another surprise and another cycle and another further experience. I honestly think it would have been so boring if I knew it only.
Well, that's great. Stella, I want to thank you so much for your time and for chatting with us this morning. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And please like our Facebook page, and you can find us on social media. Until the next journey, ciao.